Alright everybody, welcome to episode 49 of NPC Talk. My name is Inkernaut and today is October 14th, 2021. Alright, for today's episode and the next episode, I do want to apologize for the recording. I'm still trying to figure out why my volume levels are so insane, but I think I got it, and so we'll see in two episodes now how it is, but for now, enjoy everyone. Recording in 3, 2, 1, and go. Welcome everyone back to NPC Talk. We are alive again, and I'm here again with Daniel. What's up? I was like, do I have any guests here? Hello?
Woohoo!
Oh, hi.
Hello, and with Roger, who just said hi.
Oh, hi.
Guys, I have to say I've had the most degenerate morning this morning.
What has happened?
Okay, all right. So three things have happened that is pretty sus. So I'm going to start with the most degenerate thing that happened this morning is actually starts yesterday. I bought Carnival Cruise Line options that so I bought it yesterday and I bought these options that expired today with the intention that the stock will go up. And so the dumbest thing is that so the market went up yesterday and I knew that Carnival is doing pretty well because their ships have started sailing. They're still in debt, but they their ships are sailing now, which is huge, and their earnings report was coming out today, and so I bought options knowing that or thinking that it's going to go up today, right? And so the futures market, so like what the predicted market is going to start at was really low this morning, so I was like, oh crap, it's going down. And then it actually ended up starting really high. And so I was like, oh shoot. So so Carnival went up today and I was like, oh shoot, this is great. And in the morning it was like kind of fluctuating. And so I was like, oh, is it gonna go higher or is it gonna go lower? And so yeah. And so I ended up selling at like on opening, which considering how risky buying short-term options are, I ended up going about even, which is like, you know, not the best, not the worst. I got my money back. But an hour later, Carnival skyrocketed. And I missed out on so much money. I was like, dude, I read the earnings report and it was about as expected. And the overall market was fluctuating today. So I didn't think that Carnival would go up that much, but it ended up going up pretty high. And yeah, and I missed out on a bunch of money.
I am sorry to hear that.
You heard fluctuating? Fluctuating.
Should have held.
I know.
Should have held.
Yeah, I should have held, but you know, so the lesson I take from this is that when, even though the overall market was fluctuating, the stocks that I follow, which are cruise lines and then cruise line adjacent things, those were all going up. So even if Carnival's earnings report was kind of as expected and the overall market was going up and down, knowing that that things that were similar to Carnival were going up despite these things meant that Carnival was still going to go up. So I should have just held for the day and sold like maybe 2 hours ago. But you know what? You live and you learn.
You do live and learn. I've got some in a different cruise line.
Oh, shoot.
I'm just hoping it goes up.
If it's stock, it's guaranteed to go up because like cruise lines are so bad after the pandemic, and then when the pandemic ends, or like, you know, when it starts getting truly better, all cruise lines are going to go up, because they lost billions in the last couple of years, and they'll make it up. Like, it has to get better from losing billions, besides going bankrupt.
I sure hope so.
Yeah, for sure. I have, I have other degenerate options in cruise lines, and some are doing pretty badly, but some are, I'm hopeful. Actually, they're all doing badly, but one of them I'm really hopeful about.
I am very worried for your financial state.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. And then to make up for it, I bought a new phone, and I spent money on Girls Cafe guns today to make up for losing money.
Oh, nice.
Okay. What phone are you getting?
All right, so I'm getting this Chinese phone called Xiaomi.
What? Oh, no.
Yeah. And so this was a whole thing this morning, too. Oh, man, what a morning. So Xiaomi is this Chinese phone, and they're known for having top-end hardware, but, like, really crappy software. And so, like, because of those things, and then they get pretty minimal profits off of each phone. So their goal is to sell as many phones as possible. So they end up being pretty good prices for what you get. But then at the same time, your experience is a little lower than expected because the software is so bad. But I'm buying the Xiaomi Mi 11 Pro. And I bought the Xiaomi Mi 11 at first, and then I literally spent the last 2 hours, after crying about my options, I spent the last 2 hours comparing the regular 11 to the Pro, and at the end of the day, I just went with the Pro. I canceled the 11 one, and I went with the Pro because the camera difference, I mean, $100 just for a different camera, but I plan on holding this phone for at least like 3 years, so I was like, well, might as well have a good camera. Especially if the pandemic ends, then I'll have a good camera to like start doing adventures with and stuff. So I figured it was worth it.
How does the camera compare to like the iPhone?
Hardware and software wise. So hardware wise, I didn't look at the iPhone 13's camera, but they say the 11 Pro's camera is better than the 12's camera hardware wise, but software wise, you know, Apple's like the best, so the picture quality I think will probably still be better on Apple. But you know, one day when I hack a camera app and optimize it for this phone's camera, it'll be great.
You should have got the iPhone.
Are you buying it straight from China?
Yeah, so I'm getting it from this website called JizTop. JizTop, yes.
Oh. It's kind of shady. I'm already suspicious.
And yeah, and they made me pay through PayPal. So there's that.
I think like one of my old coworkers from my previous job, he used to have a Xiaomi cell phone or smartphone, and my other coworker used to joke about that there's like Chinese spyware on it.
Oh yeah, I've heard rumors about that, and if China really wanted to spy on me, they could. So I just made it one step easier for them.
Oh, what? I spy on you already.
Oh shoot! Like
we know.
Like my personal life isn't like so well secured that if a government wanted to spy on me, like they would easily be able to, because I'm just like some civilian, you know. I don't have TikTok on my phone, so there's that.
Oh.
Nice.
Okay.
Just be sure to disinfect your phone once you get it.
Because of why?
because of the CCP virus.
Oh, shoot. Yeah, well, you know, when I get it, I'll probably just not touch it for like a week. And then, yeah.
Nice.
So how's everyone else's morning? Please, let's get on from my degenerate lifestyle.
I woke up 10 minutes ago. You go, Roger.
I woke up at around like 8 o'clock. I brushed my teeth, took a shower, went to work. And yeah, it's just work this morning mostly. And now I'm eating grapes.
So what you're telling me is that while you've had a productive lifestyle today, I lost a bunch of money and Daniel just woke up.
Yeah, I guess.
Daniel just woke up from being a degen last night.
One of these is not like the other.
All right, and for today's topic, it is originality in video games. And I asked to make this into a question, but I think the question ended up just being, how original are video games? So,
I hear Roger has some thoughts on this topic.
Roger, please save us, because I have nothing to say.
My thoughts are probably like 1 minute long.
Okay.
Hold on. Let me get off push to talk.
Okay. So we have a text chat for this podcast, and for some reason Daniel is more active on there than this podcast itself, and he says it's improv. All right. Time.
All right, so my thoughts, I guess, like, I'm just gonna begin rambling. I might not even make sense, and I might be like a hypocrite, but here we go.
Okay.
So I guess, like, in the general perspective of the art medium, what I generally notice that usually it's really hard to have a true original work, because you're always going to find, as like an artist, whether it be a drawing or music or game development, you're always going to find some sort of like inspirations, like in your past life. Like, you might not be even conscious of it. It could be just a subconscious thing, but you're always drawing like inspirations from anywhere. And I think, like, as you go look through any type of media, like at games, books, music especially, and also like art, like you always see the works being derived from other past works. And I think, like, when looking through that framework, it's really hard to be original or to have a truly original idea, but that's not necessarily a bad thing, because when you're like deriving through like the work or games or books through the flow of time, like, you, like, it's pretty much like the community is improving on what was the past work and making them or refining them into something much better, right? Like, I know, like, for Dark Souls, like, Miyazaki, the director of Dark Souls, he said that, like, one of his inspirations was Zelda. And now, like, if you, after Dark Souls, you know, became such a big hit, right, now you see, like, people kind of, like, using Dark Souls as a standard now, saying, like, oh, like, this is the Dark Souls of Metroidvania, or, oh, this is the Dark Souls of, like, FPS, like, as annoying as that may be, but that kind of shows, like, you know, like, an example of art deriving from other art and improving in certain aspects, or not even improving, but maybe, like, transforming them into something different. And so those are kind of, like, my thoughts on it. It's the same with, like, music, too. Like, I don't have enough music history, but I think, like, with jazz, I know in particular there's like a jazz musician called Miles Davis, and I think, like, for him, he was usually referred to as the Jimi Hendrix Wait, was that the guy's name? Jimi Hendrix? Like the guy with the crazy guitar,
Yep.
Purple Rain, or I think it's Purple Rain. Right. Like he was kind of like hailed as like the Jimi Hendrix of jazz. I don't know. My music history is kind of like rusty. And I don't know if Miles Davis was like inspired by Jimi Hendrix or if it was the other way around. I don't really know. But anyways, what I'm trying to get at is that you're always gonna be like inspired, like as an artist, no matter what. So yeah. Originality, like even if you have no originality, it's not a bad thing. It's usually just how you take the things that you're inspired by and turning them into something that you like. And I think people like are more drawn to that than seeing that, oh, like this isn't original. Like I've already seen that like 100 times, but like I think if you have enough passion, it's gonna stand out compared to like shameless copies, I guess. Yeah. I'm gonna go back to eating grapes.
I just want to say that our huge podcast audience, we actually have a huge focus or a huge fan base on people on musical jazz experts actually. So they're just gonna berate you online for your incorrect
Yeah,
analysis.
I'm pretty sure like I'm not accurate with my music
I
stuff.
have no idea. But
Yeah.
if you want to berate Roger, you can't find him online because he has nothing. So you just DM me on Twitter at Inkernaut and I'll pass the message along.
Yeah, feel free to roast me.
I'm curious about the because I feel like what you're saying is like it's okay to have a copy of some sort of thing like Dark Souls, for instance, and yeah, there's a lot of Dark Soul-like games nowadays. But I'm wondering, like, do you feel like it's lazy game production to more or less just copy everything as it is and maybe just change the story or change the setting? Or do you
I
feel
think
like they should, in some way, like iterate on the concept, like add something unique to their game, or like, I
it
don't know.
really depends on the attention. Like, if you copy for the sake of for money, like, oh, like this really sells, like people really like this, I should just copy it and make like a lot of money out of it. Then I think in that perspective, then yes. But if you develop with the design of like, oh, I really love this game. Like, I really like what they did with this mechanic, or like, I really enjoy the atmosphere. Like, I want to apply like this my favorite stuff from it into my own like game design as well. Because I just really like this idea. And as you're developing through those ideas, there could be like a possibility of like, oh, you know what could make this idea even better, like. And then just stuff just started to flow out of that. I think like in that framework, then yes, that is actually a good thing. Because that's how like games or any art medium evolve through time, right? You just like compound ideas onto past ideas and everything just like, you just see an evolution with like creativity, with like brainstorming and like just artistry. That's how like we evolve as creators, I guess. So yeah, it's like a kind of like a gray area, because sometimes it's hard to tell of what are the intentions of the developers, like when you see something. But yeah, it's a shady area. There are times where like for example with Paper Mario, right? Like there hasn't been like a true quote like Paper Mario RPG, and I guess like people like got really impatient. So like there is this indie developer who made Bug Fables to like kind of fill that void. And I think like the same thing is going on right now with Jet Set Radio. Like there's that I don't know what the name of that indie game anymore. It's like Bomb. What was that? Like Bomb something.
I'm still looking at blood gauges.
No, wait.
No, what was the Paper Mario one?
Bug Fables or something like that.
Blood Fables?
Bug, like a B-U-G.
Bug.
Yeah. For Jet Set Radio, it's like Bomb Rush Cyberpunk.
Oh, yeah. I heard that.
Yeah, so that's like inspired by Jet Set Radio. But yeah, so I think like, you know, if there's like a void of what people like, the indie developers just started like bringing that feeling back up, you know, that you get from playing those type of games, then I think that's a good thing as well. Like, I don't think it's a shameless copy because, you know, like people like it, people want to see more of it. And so why not just bring it back, even if you're not part of that original developer?
Wait, Bug Fables looks amazing. How have I never heard of this?
It's from what I've heard, it's exactly like Paper Mario. Oh. But I've heard there's some like really shady stuff with the publisher.
Oh.
Like the publishers like have some really shady money contract with the developer. So like the developer is not getting enough money from the sales. I don't know. I could be just lying again. I always lie. So don't pay attention to me.
Nice.
I'm gonna go back to eating grapes.
Yeah, I was thinking about it, and I would say one example of probably similar to Bug Fables, like where the original concept kind of died down, and so like other developers took up the mantle, I would say is why Stardew Valley popped off so much. Harvest Moon like had the whole thing where I forget, like Namco and whoever the heck the other developer for for Harvest Moon, I forget their name right now, they split, and so I think Namco kept the name, but like the Harvest Moon genre itself kind of died down. Like the game started getting really bad, and like they weren't really being very what's it called, innovative with like newer systems and like other things you can do. And so Concerned Ape, the guy who made Stardew Valley, kind of made his own spin on the Harvest Moon genre and added, like, you know what, I wouldn't say he added a lot of new things, but he definitely put everything good about the game together in like a really cohesive way, and yeah, it kind of like brought back the genre in a way.
Yeah, like if you, yeah, like I think in that perspective, like if you have someone else that copies your own work but does it in a better way, it breeds more competition, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of like forces you to step up your game, and try to like improve on your original core game design, which is good, I think.
Yeah. Now I'm a Kickstart backer for this game called Coral Island.
Oh, I never heard of that.
So targeted ads, I think specifically in Facebook targeted ads, they know that I love Harvest Moon genre games. And so they send me like a Kickstart ad for a Harvest Moon type game like once a month. And I send them all to Daniel.
I want them. I haven't touched Animal Crossing in years now.
Yeah, I haven't either. Animal Crossing, man, the New Horizon, the Switch one, it's good. They have most of what like the old stuff has, but like the lack of interaction with the furniture, and then kind of like the requirement to grind the game in a sense, kind of made the game a little more difficult to play, especially with like mobile games. Like, I bet you the original Animal Crossing game on GameCube, like the fact that you had to grind it every day was kind of like more novel because you didn't have like smartphones at the time to like to have to like grind something for 15 minutes and then put it down. But now, like, I'm doing it for like 5 games already, so I don't have time for something like Animal Crossing. They gotta step up.
So sad.
I played Animal Crossing 2 weeks ago, actually.
What?
But I didn't really do much. I just visited my island again. I just plucked all the weeds.
Did some gardening.
Yeah, got a garden, some stuff.
Drive by gardening. They're like, who the heck is this person? Man, I will say on the topic, like, I play a lot of mobile games.
You degen.
Like, dude, mobile games, they're just like, they're horrible. I think probably like the easiest example is like Bejeweled. Way back in the day, like that one, where it's like just a match three game, very simple, pop cap, made it, and it got so popular, people got addicted to it. And then came Candy Crush, and then came like thousands of other iterations.
Yeah, they're all bad too.
Yeah, I feel like the mobile game, whatever, like what is it, the environment or something, like everyone, every time something like is really popular, I feel like it's always like the Chinese developers. They always like pick it up and then make their own version.
Yeah.
Like really quickly, like just pump something out and just try to capitalize on the trend. Like, dang, this is, man, like Arknights. It's like, it's cool, but it's basically just tower defense. Like, we've been playing Alchemy Stars. That one's cool, but then there's also a game I played before where it's just literally you trace lines through colors.
Yeah, yeah. And like Girls Gone Cafe too. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So dude, good.
Girls Gone Cafe is basically Dragalia Lost.
Oh, dude, yeah. when you put it that way.
That was just Mahjong. but I actually Mahjong so kind of really took off, I feel. Because I think before there wasn't really any dominant Mahjong platform that had cute girls specifically.
Uh-huh.
So I remember like reading an interview from the Mahjong Soul developers and they were like, oh yeah, we watched Saki and we really liked it. And so we wanted to have like cute girls with Mahjong in a video game. And so that's why we were inspired to create Mahjong Soul. And I'm like, oh yeah, I'm down with you guys. Okay,
never mind.
I'm actually
so down if they did that for chess.
Oh yeah. Like chess soul.
Yeah.
Cute girls.
Dude, I would actually play that.
I would too.
We have an idea, boys.
I think like anything with cute girls is just an improvement.
I feel like that's basically what they did. They just took popular game concepts and then added cute girls.
Mm-hmm. You know, my dad has been playing Candy Crush for years now. And I know that guy is a degen too. So I wonder how much money he spent on it without telling us.
Oh, your dad.
Yeah.
I will say on the more unique side of things, I always feel like, I guess Nintendo, kind of. I always feel like a lot of the Nintendo games, they always are the ones that iterate or make enough changes to where something is like the brand new in this category. And it's something that other people try to strive to be. But also, as far as mobile goes, I feel like all the Pokemon games, besides like Pokemon Unite, which is literally just a MOBA. Like, I feel like all the other ones are pretty unique in some sort of way. Like, I don't know if you guys have played the other Pokemon games on mobile, where it's like Magikarp Jump.
Oh, yeah.
You literally feed a Magikarp until it gets big, and then it jumps, and then if it loses the fight, you get a new Magikarp. Man, when I simplify it down, it sounds so stupid. But it's like the concept itself is very unique. Like, there's no other game that is kind of like that. Although, I guess you could say it's like a clicker game where it's like infinite progression almost.
Magikarp Jump was fun.
Yeah. This is like Pokemon Quest 2.
I'm hearing about it.
Oh, really? You're not a mobile game degen like we are?
Sadly, I don't think I am.
It's okay. Stay
out. Yeah, it's a good thing.
Yeah, like Pokemon Quest too. It's mm-hmm. literally like you have three Pokemon. They just basically run around and do stuff, and then you can interact and use skills, and then you're like, how you get more is you make recipes and you cook stuff, and then it's like, I don't know, like I feel like they're very unique in what they do.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say that is Nintendo's strengths. Literally on that exact note, I was thinking, what makes like things original is like new technology, both like hardware and software. And on the hardware side, like Nintendo is always like in the forefront of trying to be unique in like new technology without just like improving on the graphics or improving on the speed. They're trying to like get as much speed as possible, but like trying to do something new with it, right? And that can be seen with the Switch, which like no one has even thought of like such a powerful handheld device that can also like connect to the TV easily and like do all these things with the controller to make it multiplayer friendly. It's like pretty cool.
Yeah, Nintendo's just very unique.
Example is like the Wii also, right, with the nunchucks, and also like the DS with the touch stylus also, like trying to bring some innovation or some new level of player immersion on the hardware side.
Or the 3DS with the 3D screen.
Oh,
that was such a useless gimmick.
Yeah, I will say like Nintendo, they're ride or die original hardware concepts. So like the Wii U was like pretty bad, and 3DS was good, but the 3DS gimmick was pretty bad. And like I appreciate that they are ride or die and like trying to be innovative, but also fuck them because they're screwing over the Super Smash Bros. Melee scene, and I am all for that. So so there's that.
I'm indifferent
also.
You're on your own here.
You know what? I will die on this hill, but I will also buy Metroid Dread.
Oh, I would buy it too.
Yeah. Like, I mean, even that, it's like, it's so unique in some way. I guess it's very similar to like the old Metroid games in that sense, but it's like even the original Metroid games, I feel like it kind of set the tone for the genre.
Yeah, the Metroidvania.
Yeah.
Is Dread, like from what you've seen, is it unique in any way? It looked kind of just like a throwback.
It looked like a throwback.
Yeah, okay. okay. I also wanted to ask Daniel, because I think you're the only one that watched Nintendo's E3.
I don't remember. Hold on, let me quickly Google.
Okay, well, I do know that they had a Castlevania Collections game. What's going on there?
Oh, sorry, that wasn't a... Oh, you mean the thing yesterday?
Was that not... Oh, Nintendo Direct, right?
Yeah.
Direct, I'm sorry, Direct.
That was just... I think that was just... They made a... like the old Game Boy Advance Castlevania collection.
So like only like two or three games?
I honestly didn't play a lot of the Castlevania games because I was bad at them.
All right, can you not?
I don't know which ones are there.
Can you not make me a YouTube video? I can't watch this during the podcast.
It's four Castlevania classics.
Can you tell me the names of them?
Circle of the Moon, Harmony of Dissonance, Aria of Sorrow, and Dracula X.
Okay. That Aria of Sorrow is amazing, but honestly, like the three. The DS ones, the three games that came out on the DS, Dawn of Sorrow, Portrait of Ruin, and Order of Ecclesia, plus Aria of Sorrow, and the PlayStation one, that started it all. Freaking, what is it called? Symphony of the Night.
Oh, for PlayStation, yeah.
Yeah, those
card.
Those five are all amazing, and they should just make the collection of those five games.
I've only played Symphony of the Night and Order of Ecclesia.
Both really good ones.
Yeah, they were good.
I've only started them and then just rage quit and
I never touched it. I didn't finish Symphony of the Night.
Oh. Did it get to like the midway point where that thing happened?
So I know what you're talking about, and I got to right before it. But I read online what happens. Yeah.
I read it like spoiler free, and I was like, oh, this is pretty hype.
That is really cool. Yeah, it's really creative. And then they basically had to hashtag level design to like make it all work right.
Yeah, I was going to like mention that too. Hashtag level design.
Nice.
Yeah,
we need to have that discussion someday.
Yeah, and if you're interested in a introductory thought discussion on level design, please check out Roger's article on Inchronaut.com for it, and it also has the original link to Roger's blog.
Oh yeah, feel free to roast me
or compliment him.
But roast.
Oh man,
was there anything exciting? Anything else exciting on the direct?
You know, I feel like it's what's the saying? Different strokes for different folks. I am interested in Yoko Taro's Voice of Cards game.
What is that?
So Yoko Taro's the guy who made Nier Automata. What was it, Dragon Guard? That those series. Mm-hmm. He's making a card game. It looks like the entire story plays out in cards. You've got characters on cards, stuff like that. I think I'm mostly interested because of the music, because it sounds like Nier's music, and Nier's music was like just the best. that's the main selling point for me. I think most of the other things that came out during it, I'm like, this is okay. Maybe Triangle Strategy. Maybe I'll check that out. It's like, it looks like, what is it? Octopath meets Fire Emblem or Final Fantasy Tactics.
I remember I saw it in E3, I think. It looks very, like, old school, like the way that it's presented, but with updated graphics.
Yeah, yeah. Then there's Chocobo GP, which is basically Final Fantasy Mario Kart.
Oh, the Chocobo racing games. Yeah. I remember playing the demo for one of the Chocobo racing games on PlayStation. Like as a kid, I got wrecked by the AI, but I remember it was pretty funny or fun.
Dude,
I like Mario Kart the Switch. Though.
It's coming to the Switch. Nice. You can play it. I feel like most of the other stuff was just like updates. I guess there is a new Kirby game, but I'm not a huge fan of Kirby, so I don't know what's going on in that area.
For sure.
New Splatoon 3.
I've only played Kirby Superstar, I think. There might have been another Kirby game that I played, but I don't really remember. I just remember Superstar.
I played the Crystal Shards on the Nintendo 64.
Oh, was that 3D? Or
it was 3D, but it was a 2D platformer, if that makes sense.
Oh, I see. I wanted to play Kirby Air Ride also, which is like a Mario Kart version of Kirby.
I heard it was really good.
Yeah, it looks cool.
Roger, do you like racing games?
I have not as much as I would say. I guess the last racing game my dad had played was the Toho Sky Drift, which is exactly like Mario Kart again. But it was developed by the Mario Kart Double Dash developers. And it's their own Toho indie game. And so, as you would expect from Double Dash, it plays exactly like it. Like, you have two drivers that can switch back and forth, and they can each hold an item to use. But I think it kind of feels more like technically advanced than Double Dash. Like, there's a lot more like technical skills and shortcuts that are more demanding for the player. But otherwise, it's pretty fun. But I don't think in general, I don't think I'm that much of a racing person. I just sometimes enjoy playing racing games.
I complain about like the concept of racing like all the time, because like not even just racing video games, but like even in like IRL racing, like I can't stand that in a circle track, like, you know, the most optimal way is like turning on the inside of the track, or like even for track and field, like running a track, like the most optimal way is like running in a circle. And so the ones where like you start staggered and then you have to run like say like a 400, that one's kind of okay because it's all more or less even, although, you know, like the closer one has to turn tighter or something like that. But like the ones where like the racers, it's like, you know, like a 2 mile or something, and the racers, like, they can just pick any track, and then they're all like stuck together, and like the dude who may be the fastest might not win because he or she is stuck in like the middle of the pack, and it's like way too hard to like go around them and stuff. And like basically you can't go around people during turns, right? You have to wait till a flat straightaway. It just feels so like outdated. Like, I know you can't like change the shape of a circle, but like there's got to be a better way to do this. And like it just annoys me. It's like when I go go-kart racing and like there's this like slow ass car in front of me, and I'm like, I can't go around this person, and like if I try to like do like a wider turn, they just cut me off anyways. I'm like, this isn't fun. Like, I'm a better driver than you, but like, what am I supposed to do?
So, being inspired by Mario Kart, you would have to throw a red shell equivalent at the person in front of you, right?
Nice.
So you would have to, like, I don't know, shoot them with a gun or something.
Just bullet bill it up.
I feel like you guys are being really unrealistic here. And and I should just throw a banana peel. That's like way more realistic.
Yeah.
A gun is pretty realistic.
Oh man, I feel like at that point, if you want it to be like the exact same for everybody, I feel like you just have to ever have people go one by one. Like, ooh, once they finish, just get their time, then the next person goes.
Yeah, that one, that's also tough. I don't know, but if golf can figure out an 18-hole freaking course for one session, I'm sure the people of the running community can figure something out.
Nah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I'm sure those professional runners love it.
There's probably like some like strategy that's associated with it, for sure.
There is, but I don't know. It's not my favorite.
Isn't it like that speed walking thing that Roger showed us?
Oh, that's
before?
That's all strategy.
Yeah,
yeah, like... all strategy. Gotta go to the bathroom at the right time.
Can't just walk for 6 hours and not have to poop.
Yeah. Man.
I think like in the earlier Olympic, like that same guy who went to the bathroom, he also pooped his pants.
What a legend.
Yeah, go friends.
Oh man.
All right, and on that note, I think that concludes today's episode of NPC Talk.
Woo!
Daniel, Roger, thank you so much for joining. Yep.
Thanks for having us.
You're welcome. And see you guys next time.
All right. See ya. Thanks for listening. Subscribe and sponsor us.
Sponsor, please.
Oh, yeah. For real, sponsor us. And I figured out the podcast email. Email, it is npctalkpodcast@gmail.com. All one word. Caps don't matter. So, yeah, go for it. Email there.
Email all your feedback.
Yes.
We want to hear from you.
Especially my friends who are not Daniel and Roger. You guys better email to let me know you're listening.
Dang it.
All right, bye.
Bye.